Yeah, I'll start by just saying thank you to Ajahn Yanako and the resident community for allowing me such a flying visit. I think I'm only here about 18 hours. And I'll say I want to stay a lot longer. I wish I could. But currently staying with family down in Marin. My mother's very unwell, and I'm helping with nursing her and supporting down there. Otherwise, I'd be up here a lot longer. So, but coming up today, because Ajahn Yanako accompanied the ride to pick me up in Santa Rosa, and just driving up through Redwood Valley, and then when we hit the driveway, it was like nectar, just the beginning of the nectar, and then being together with all of the resident monastic community in particular was really just full on. Joy. And although I like staying with my family, it's quite stressful there right now. And it's important, but Sangha is my life. So Buddha Dhamma Sangha is my life. And that can be practiced anywhere, as we know. It can be practiced in family. It can be practiced in a crowd. It can be, you can be in downtown San Francisco or Piccadilly Circus or whatever. Of course, we can practice Dhamma. Buddha Dhamma Sangha is with us. But actually coming together, and especially, look around this room, monastic community. For those of you who are regulars here, you see, this is not the normal amount of monks here. And so a great many of the Abhayagiri diaspora have gathered, and almost all of them have ordained here. Almost all of them. And this isn't everybody. There's more. Not hidden here, by the way. They're not. Far from Ajahn Krinadamo, he's not feeling well. But it's special. But it's only special if it's meaningful to us. And so certainly hearing the different voices today and having chats with people since I arrived, and people who live here feel it's special, and people who are visiting here feel it's special. And so, yeah, I'm just super happy. So Ajahn Yanako, he didn't request a topic for me to speak on, but he did make a small suggestion. Maybe I'd speak a little bit about my time, because I began my monastic life here in 2002. As Ajahn Yanako said, he and I sat side by side for a long time in the old hall, which is, I guess, the dining hall now. Especially sitting along the side, we would, at certain times, we'd be kind of one behind the other. So I know the back of Ajahn Yanako's head very well. So sitting in the van today, coming up, it was just very familiar. I was in the back seat. I felt at home. But all joking aside, we have shared experiences. And so Ajahn Yanako and I have known each other for 23 years. I only lived here for about seven of those years, but I make a point of dropping by here usually once a year, at least once a year. Come and stay for a few days. Also last year, it was a joy to host Ajahn Yanako, Ajahn Sudanto, at Chithurst Monastery. And so, Sangha. And so for me to come back here, even for 18 hours, in a way, it feels almost more powerful. Coming for even just a short time, just this powerful feeling of family, Sangha, harmony, shared experiences. But years ago, Lumpo Pasano, I remember as a junior monk, I can't remember what kind of meeting it was, but he said, monasteries, it's a place, it's buildings. But he said, what makes it a monastery is people. Without people, it's not a monastery. You can call it that. You can say, those empty buildings, that used to be a monastery, or that's a monastery, but without community. Without the lay community, without the monastic community, a Buddhist monastery is not a Buddhist monastery. And look at the fruits of community. This monastery, and I think it's now, 29 years old, if my calculations are right? In 29 years, and for those of us who have been coming here since the earlier days, we see changes, physical changes, but also communal changes. Once again, to repeat that if we give value to these things, then we'll see the profundity of it. That's obviously an opinion. My opinion is profound. And so I think each year that I live since taking up this life, the samana life, the life of the spiritual seeker, I feel a more and more, a deeper and deeper sense of gratitude, thanks, that I stumbled into this. And also the value of my time here as a foundation. And even the thought came up, it was when we were, I think we were heading up the hill, and I was like, why did I ever leave here? these years ago, but, different things pull us in different directions, and my wishing to spend time with Lumpur Sumedho in England, because that's where I first encountered this tradition. I've been living in England pretty much, except for my years here and a year in Thailand. I've been living in England for more than 40 years. And so that was where I was really drawn to Dhamma, Buddha Dhamma Sangha. And so I wanted to spend time with Lumpur Sumedho. And since I knew him already, and so one thing led to another. And after finishing my initial training here, I went back to England. And apart from, about, I guess I came back in 2014 for 7 months. And that was just after my 10th. A little bit after my 10th Vasana, and spent time here. So that's the last time I lived here. But constantly, I'm still learning from my time here. That might sound either strange or maybe, I don't know, yeah, it could sound a bit odd, but I still learn from my lay life. I still learn from my life as a working person or as a young person, because but looking at it through Dhamma eye, looking at it through the lenses of Dhamma. And so also I Ajahn Kachana, who's two seats to my left, he lives at Chitra's monastery and has been there for several years. And so he and I, we will sometimes make a comment, one of us will make a comment about how precious we consider our time here, the training here. And so Ajahn Kachana, he had the opportunity to spend the winter at Amravati. And one of the driving factors was having Lumpur Pisano and Ajahn Amro together, living together in the same place, not just being together for a week, and also having Lumpur Sumedho there. But yeah, those early years here, the foundation, the training that we received, and the training that has continued here, I mean, that's to look around and see how many monks have stayed living here, who ordained here, and have stayed connected, is a real testament to the foundation of this place, I feel. So yes, some of us have gone off, and I've spread my wings and gone off elsewhere. But to have a foundation like that, to have people want to come back, to want to come and live here, or at least even come and visit, it really says something. Now, what do we do with that? So we can talk about community, we can talk about, it was marvelous, it was wonderful, we have this great foundation, but we need to use that. So the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, they're called refuges for a reason. They're refuges because there's something for us to frame our life, to be able to frame our life with. And so regardless of where we're living, many of us are scattered living in different places, even though we've come together today and for this short period, we need to use this moment too, use this uplift, this feeling of harmony, and the Pali word sammagi, often translated, mostly translated as harmony, and to use a gathering like this as fuel. I feel that I like to use it as fuel for practice, fuel for realizing the goal. So the goal is not to have a gathering of 23 bhikkhus. That's not the goal. This has just happened for whatever reason. But the goal is full liberation. And so if I misuse a gathering like this, if I somehow relate to it with defilement, with kilesa, if I pick it up in my mind and heart, or just completely miss the chance to utilize a situation like this. If we're misusing a situation, then that can actually be to our, it can, in a way, be a detriment. So we have to be very, this is where, you know, really, really is understanding the Buddha's teachings, taking them, the Noble Eightfold Path, over and over again has been taught. And it's eightfolds. It's not onefold. It's not just meditation. It's not just right speech. It's not just, it's eightfolds. And developing the refuges, using the refuges, understanding them, and not just intellectually, but really in the heart, and framing our life. So using these real core, I don't like to use the word basic because that almost makes it sound, for some of our ears, including my own, potentially, it can make it sound like a sort of beginner, you know, but no, they're really the core teachings. And not allow ourselves to get lost in things that they might be very interesting and they might be helpful, but we need to keep that core, that foundation, and like a building. I was marveling at how well these buildings have held up, because I wasn't living here when this one was built, but I was living here when, like, the offices and a lot of the kutis. And, you know, I was thinking, because also being an abbot, we tend to also keep an eye on buildings. It's not just, you also, does that need maintenance? But I was marveling at how well the buildings are keeping up. And why? Because of their foundations. And they were put together. They were properly thought out, properly maintained. We need to maintain our understanding of Buddha Dhamma, not just think we understand it, even if we do, but we need to, like a good or a healthy garden, it needs to be nurtured. It needs to be nurtured either through just, maybe it's just a wild forest. If it's not nurtured with sunlight and water and nutrients, it too, even if it's right in the middle of nature, it will not do well. So our practice, we need to continually review as well, or from time to time, review those foundational core things. Like this winter retreat, because at Chithurst, I don't know if we're doing it here now, but we get like also a solitary retreat within the retreat. And so I each get 4 weeks of the bhikkhus and Sila Dara, the nuns. And I decided, I don't choose a theme, but it's sort of just something leapt out. And I was learning the Anapanasati, the chant and the mindfulness of breathing. I think they do it here. And then I thought, I'd like to listen to some more talks on Anapanasati. So I found the talks that Lumpur Pisano gave here 20 years ago, I think during the winter retreat. And so it was 19 talks on just step by step of the Anapanasati Sutta, the Sutta on Mindfulness of Breathing. Just go back to basics, and that's something that Lumpur Pisano would often say, back to basics. And not just continually think we need to increase, get more and more and more information. Yeah, so training here, it was, you know, of course there was, I have memories of hardship, of difficult times, but I have more memories of really just really feeling lucky. I felt lucky to be here. It was hard for me to give up my lay life. It took 10 years. And so when I finally got here, I felt really fortunate. And so no matter how hard, you know, things maybe felt and maybe, you know, were in my own mind and heart, because it was just my own suffering, my own creation. Nobody was hard on me. Nobody abused me. Nobody mistreated me. But, you know, the hardships that we go through, but you stay with it. I remember at the end of my first year, because I didn't really leave my lay life behind in a particularly skillful way, I quit my job and they said, would you consider this a sabbatical if you're not sure whether you're going to continue with monastic life? You say you're just testing the waters. You know, maybe would you, if you come back to London, would you pick up your job? Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah, that'd be wonderful. I love my job. And my partner had said, she'd said, well, look, because the whole thing started with her saying, look, are you going to be a monk or are we going to be life partners? So she said, I'll give you 15 months to sort yourself out. Give it a go as a anagarika, white robe renunciate. So I had my partner had put me on sabbatical. My work put me on, gave me a sabbatical. My flat, my apartment was sitting there. My car, my jeans, my clothes, all my belongings waiting for me. My whole life was, you know, like, you know, the little double bar, double vertical bars for the pause button on our, on, you know, on our phone or on a device. And it was pause. And so that first year here, you know, I was really going for it into, I really want to use this opportunity, but I wasn't sure, you know, what was going to happen at the end of the year, you know. And then made that final decision to not just release the pause button and bring it back to play and just get on the plane and go back to London and start my life again, restart my life. And as challenging as that was, it was to, then I really felt I could really put myself into it. Really, really devote myself even more fully to the life, what was being offered here. But as I said, my interest to go to England was wholesome, was to spend time with a teacher that I was very drawn to, Lumpur Sumedho. As a layman, I used to drive up. You know, basically, the only reason I had a car was to get up to Amaravati. And I was going up, when I wasn't traveling, I was going up 2-3 times a week, every time there was a Dhamma talk. It was mostly him and Lumpur Veerdamo at that point giving Dhamma talks and trading back and forth. Lumpur Veer was the abbot for some of those years there. And then as a monastic too, I wasn't particularly drawn to Amaravati for ordaining. In the beginning, I couldn't really see myself living there. But then after my initial training here and wanting to stay with Lumpur Sumedho, I went and I ended up staying there for 9.5 years on and off. And then, Ajahn Yenako, like I said, he had suggested maybe talk a little bit about picking up the role of the duties of abbot there at Chitthurst. You know, I didn't ordain. How many of us ordained to become an abbot, right? Probably not many. I haven't met one yet. There must be some. And then as we, the longer we stay, like so many things in life, the longer we stay with it, then, you know, we get experience. And then maybe people look to us to help out in particular ways. And I wasn't, you know, I'm not a senior monk. I'm not very senior. I've been a bhikkhu for 21 years, which might sound like a long time, but when you sit next to somebody or if you meet a monk, like we were talking about Pandit Gunaratana, he's been in robes as a novice and a bhikkhu for 85 years. So then 21 years is sort of your childhood in a good way. So like sitting next to Ajahn Yenako, he and I, we approximately the same time, we're called upon, you know, within about a year, we're asked to help out in ways that, you know, I think I can safely say that Ajahn Yenako didn't ordain to become the abbot of the Bhayagiri Monastery. Am I right, Ajahn?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Okay. So, and yet, when we're asked to do certain things, whether let's take abbot out of it, you know, we can pick things up to help out. I've been told, I don't know if it's factual, whether it's accurate, but I've been told that when Lumpur Liam, our beloved teacher who's you know, scheduled to come here, I guess next month, and you know, the abbot of Wat Phapong after Lumpur Cha, I read that when he was asked to do it, he was somewhat reluctant, but finally said something along the lines of, well, maybe I can help out a little bit. Maybe I can help out in this way. And so also I feel that, you know, for 15 years, somebody else did it. You know, I was living in a monastery. Somebody else was doing that for me, you know, taking on responsibilities so that I could practice and not have to do that. And so 6 years ago, I 6 or 7 years ago, I agreed to do that at Chitthurst. And it's difficult. It's challenging. But it's great because you can't hide. you can run away, you can just, you know, you, but you can try to hide, but you can't hide. If you're actually fulfilling your responsibilities and duties, or even trying, you know, you just can't go and hide in your kuti, or you're really at the coal face. I don't know if that's an American expression. Sorry.
What is it?
At the coal face, you know, like you're in the coal mine and you're right up at the, you're at the face of the coal. You're okay. Never mind. I won't use that one again. Not in the States. Yeah. You're really at the, you're right there. You're at the front line. And I actually like that. I don't, because I can't run away. And I know I need to face the things that I do face, that we do face when we have extra responsibility. I'm just sharing my own responses to this, my own experience. And it's not always like that. I mean, there's a lot of joy. It's not like it's just this one, you know, gritting my teeth and bearing with it. No, there's a super amount of joy and living with such worthy people. I mean, we're, you know, living in monasteries like this, Chithurst, Abhayagiri, the name, the monastery, temple, keep going down the list. So much joy, so much uplift, but it's hard. And it's great practice. So in the car, when Ajahn Yenago asked me to offer the talk tonight, invited me, the words, what's it like to be abbot? And that's one of the, I half jokingly, not even half jokingly, brought out some words, you know, to endure. And not with, here again, not with gritted teeth. That's patience, to develop patience. And this goes for all of us, whether we have responsibility or not. There's things we need to endure our own mind states, our own heart states, to endure situations that we don't find comfortable, to endure anything that's unwanted. I mean, the list is long. I could keep going. But to endure, we're using the framework here again, frame things, the teachings of the Buddha. Because if we endure with the wrong intention, then that's not leading us to Nibbana. If we endure with the wrong attitude, if it's an attitude of, well, I'm just going to endure this, and I can't wait to get out of here. No, that's not, as far as my understanding, that's not it. That's not patience. Patience framed in the Buddha's teaching is, patience is not like, oh, I can endure this until it changes to something I like. No, it's just, I can endure this. Whether it changes to something I like, that's not the point. Like, oh no, I've got patience, I can wait, I just missed the bus, I can wait till the next one comes. No, that's not the patience of the Buddha. The Buddha is, you can just be patient, maybe bus not coming. Sometimes, you know, we can maybe hear, oh, well, it'll change. Buddha teaches everything changing, all conditions changing. So, you know, maybe when things are hard, there's hardship, oh, but it'll change, it'll change. Yeah, it might get worse. Where is it written that it's going to get better according to our own values? So that just, oh, endure, be with it, open. Feel it. Don't run. Don't hide. With our own mind states, with the, here again, as a repetition, a conscious repetition on my part, you know, whether it's external or internal, to be able to develop that. And so, my things right now and Chithurst, you know, it's just real, real joyful. Very, you know, I haven't been experiencing anything particularly outstandingly difficult, or, you know, I'm sure there's things. But I know I can sometimes feel myself grasping at that. I was speaking earlier today in the car on the way up, also like around communal harmony. I can sometimes, because the harmony has been really, really excellent, you know, for a few years now. And yeah, you get, you know, of course, people living together, you know, of course you're going to have difference of opinions and maybe little ripples. But I can also sometimes feel myself clinging, you know, that grasping, that, you know, maybe something does ripple a little bit and I can, you want to hang on to it, which is natural. Who wouldn't want it? Who doesn't want harmony? But it's suffering. You know, can we, you know, when you spend time with people that have have really maybe developed that aspect of their practice more clearly and firmly, and or have more experience with this, and you know, they're going through the ups and downs of life, open. So when we listen to, or like Lumpur Sumedho, you know, it's that phrase, it's like this. Harmony is like this. A ripple in harmony is like this. Be able to be with that and to feel that, to feel maybe feel whatever we feel, anxiety or stress or, you know, whatever we feel, to feel the joys, and just to really to be with that and be open and to be able to let that flow, experience flow. That I feel, you know, just in my own, looking at my own experience in life, that how much pressure sometimes we put on ourselves to, quote unquote, be happy, pressurize, doubt, you know, try to pressurize ourselves into making right decisions and having everything perfect and good and things like that. And it doesn't mean that we shouldn't put effort there, but it's, you know, it's that pressure that we put on ourselves, that's suffering. Basing our well-being on things that are fragile, that are movable, that are insecure, instead of put in the effort to stabilize, to create. I mean, like what's created here, you know, yeah, put in effort. And look at all the effort that's put in here to maintain community, the people and the buildings, the land, to maintain that. It's important, yeah. We don't just go, oh, it's all good. I don't know if that's still a popular phrase here in the States. I don't like it. Sorry if people do like it, but it's not all good. It sounds good, but it's not all good. But we do our best to make it good. We do our best, and not everything is good. And when things are not good, we do our best to make it good. And to see, are we clinging? Is there bhavatana? Is there that becoming energy? Are we trying to become and be and create things that aren't real? That aren't real. Are we trying to annihilate the opposite of vibhavatanha? Are we trying to just get rid of? But does that mean we don't try to do things wholesome? No, do wholesome things. Yeah, try to, if something is unwholesome, if something's unwanted, yeah, we can shepherd that, we can nurture the good and ease out, you know. But we need to really, here again, keep an eye on that intention. What's our intention? How are we holding it? And are we creating a sense of self? Because that's the birth. You know, all these suttas, and so many of them at the end say, you know, no more coming into any state of being. And describing people realizing the end of the path, nibbana, full liberation. So are we in our life, and as, you know, whether we're, you know, whatever we're doing with our life, are we creating more states of believing in states of being? It's that belief in what we think we are, what we think other people are. Are we creating other people in our minds, fixing them in our minds, or creating ourselves? Instead of just using the conventional world, using, you know, anagarika, samanera, novice, a nun, monk, abbot, vice abbot, whatever, using these forms. Use that. If somebody says, you know, where's the abbot? Yeah, point to Ajahn Yenikal. That's a conventional form. That's an agreement. And that's good. But if they point at Chithurst, they point to me. Is it? But if I'm believing that I'm an abbot, but to use it, use anagarika, use novice, use bhikkhu, use siladhara, use practitioner, use whatever. They're real with a small r, not real with a big r. And then utilize whatever situation we're in, however long we're in it. And whether we come here for 18 hours or we've been living here for the last 6 years or whatever, yeah, to utilize every. So the word I like to, it's such a common word, opportunity. Every single one of us has this opportunity. Wake up, regardless of what form we're living in. monastic lay form, we all have the opportunity. And if we slip, then we pick ourselves up, because it happens. So just before closing, yeah, I know, just to share what, for myself, I know that this is, as I started at the beginning of this sharing this evening, that yeah, this really feels like nectar. This is so nourishing for me personally to spend this very short time here, to be able to go back and then be more, hopefully be more present for my mother, for my brother. I want to also do a shout out, because our caregivers are our disciples of Abhayagiri, which is marvelous. And we've got hospice nurses coming and going, but we have 5 hours a day, we have caregivers, professional caregivers that are all disciples of Abhayagiri. And it's really, my mother had never really, she's been here a few times, but no particular interest. But it's really beautiful to see how she's bonded with the caregivers and the care that she's receiving, not just from my brother, which is amazing care, but like I was just this morning before coming here watching, you know, I was actually listening. At that point, I wasn't in the room, but listening to the caregiver who's associated with here, and you could just, you know, feel this mutual appreciation between my mother and the caregiver. So that's another thing, you know, just that all arose out of here. So I'll go back being uplifted by seeing lots and lots of familiar faces, both in the lay community and in the monastic community. And going back, and hopefully I can be of more help, and it'll also help propel me along the path of the Buddha Dhamma, using Buddha Dhamma Sangha. So I just, as you may hear from many people that offer these reflections, these are just reflections, and hopefully I've said something that might be helpful or resonate with somebody. But if not, just gently lay it aside and let it slip from your memory. Okay, sadhu.